In relation to Grihastha Ashram and family life, I prepared some outline points here. And maybe we can discuss those. And then I'll hear specifically from you. But I want to establish the philosophical basis of Grihastha life and human life. Now, firstly, we say we're Christians or we're Hindus. Like in our case, we might say Hindus. I'm born in the land of India, so Hindu. So then, everyone, if someone is a Hindu, then pretty much they'll agree that there's something, there's a concept known as Jagadishvara. Jagadishvara. Or, say, Jaya Jagadisha Hare, a famous Artik song. Jaya Jagadisha Hare. So Jagadish. Jagadish, or Jagadishvara, it means that Jagat means universe, which includes this planet and all the planets. Anishvara means controller. So controller means master. So this means, and Jagadishvara, of course, is referring to Bhagavan. Bhagavan Ram, Bhagavan Vishnu, Krishna, Lagalaganam, different names. Some people think Shiva's Bhagavan. Nevertheless, it's some great personality beyond us, some very powerful personality, the absolute truth, God, etc., Jagadish. And even if one's a Christian, he accepts the Supreme Father, the absolute being, and the Muslims also. So if we identify or define Bhagavan as the Supreme Master or Lord, Lord, we say Lord, Lord and Master, then who are we? Who are we and what are we? Who are we and what are we? Are we God? Are we masters? Because if he's a supreme master, you can't be a master unless you have servants. Agreed? Yeah. If you're the master, then you have to have servants. If you're the boss, if you're the employer, then you must have employees, workers, laborers. So the supreme master, or the supreme, we say Ishvara, Ishvara, Parameshvara, the supreme Ishvara. So that is God. So then what is our God, Bhagavan? He controls everything. Bhaktaram Yagatapasam, Sarvaloka Maheshram, Suridam Sarvabhutanam, Gyatvaman Shantarichiti. Krishna says in Gita, I am Maheshwaram, I am the Bhaktaram, I am the enjoyer, I am the Maheshwaram, I am the controller, I am the Lord. And then, so we say, all right, Bhagavan, that's your identity. That's your position, Bhagavan. But what is mine? Oh, your position is this. Then he says in 15th chapter of Gita, Mamayvam cho jivaloke, jivabhuta sanatanam, manashastrani indrani prakriti stani karshati. That the jivas, mama amsha, jiva. He says, Mamayvam cho jiva. The jiva, we are jiva, jivatma. We're spiritual beings. We are mama. We are belong to him. He says, mine. Krishna is telling Arjuna, you are mine. You belong to me. So the actual relationship, the relationship between God and all the living entities, between all the jivas, we are all created by God, and we're actually meant to serve the Supreme Master. Because it makes us all servants. That's, if he's the master, then who are the servants of that Supreme Master? We living entities. We jivas. And all the various forms of life. Some are aware of it, some are not aware of it. The animals covered by ignorance and tamagun, they're not aware of their identity. They're just moving on their sense impulse. As the senses dictate, they move. They eat, they sleep, they mate, they defend. Ahara nidra maitun bayam. But as the jivatma moves through evolutionary cycle, from one body to another body, then his mind starts to change, his consciousness starts to change, he becomes aware of God. God exists. And he starts to ponder and inquire, well, what is the relationship between me and that Supreme Master? Ishavasya midam sarvam, Ishopanishad is telling. And then he thinks, well, what is my actual identity anyway? Like we ask someone, who are you? We say, oh, I'm Mr. Bidani, I'm Mr. Manchan. And then we define ourselves in relation to different upadis. Upadis. Upadis means designation. Uddi means intelligence, upa means situated near, or standing, or sitting near. So when your intelligence is sitting near this idea, that's called upadi. Upadi is. So D means intelligence. So then, we start to think, well, what is this dharma? So dharma, by definition, dharma means the essential quality of an object. The essential quality of an object is dharma. So we say, okay, using that definition, take sugar, chini. What is the essential quality of sugar? If you say white, I say no. If you say crystalline, I say no. Salt is white, salt is crystalline, and so is strychnine. And so how do you define? There's so many white powders. Some are highly poisonous. Some are very nutritious. Some fruit sugars or whatever. So how do you define? What is the specific definition of chini? What is the dharma, the essential quality? Sweetness. So, oh, that's sugar. Or at least it has that attribute. That's one of the attributes, the lakshana. So then you look at chili pepper, hara mirch or whatever, lal mirch. The essential quality, is it its redness? No. Capsicum is also red, and carrots are also red. So red is not the essential quality. Is it long and skinny? Is that its essential quality? No. String beans are long and skinny. Chili looks like the string bean. Oh, let me say, oh, is this a string bean? Oh, you've tried, you bite it. This is not a string bean, Jack. This is hara mirch. Jana Agni. So the essential quality of mirch is this pungency, this fire, this heat. So now look at the Atma. We are also a created being. We are part of this material world. We are a conscious entity, a living entity. What is our essential quality? The essential quality of the Atma is not mastership, because we have already established Bhagavan is the master and it's his universe. We're in his universe. If I'm in your plastic bag factory, I'm not the master. I've been hired by you. My position in your factory has been created by you. You know, you were to run this machine. I've created this position. Now I fill it with you. You come here, you fill this position, you take your salary. So you're my servant. I'm your master. If I say this, you're out. And you have to perform. So now if we look at our own identity, the essential quality of the Jivatma is seva, service. Forget about Hindu Dharma, Christian Dharma, Buddhist Dharma, Muslim Dharma. That's all, again, upadis. Upadis. You're born here, this is your designation. You're born there, that's your designation. In this family, you're Christian. In that family, you're Muslim. But when you get down to essence, what is the sar? The tattva sar, the essence of truth. Tattva. Tattva sar. You strip away everything. The gender. I'm not man, I'm not woman, I'm not Indian. Then get down to the Atma. The living principle of the Atma is that I'm a unit of service. I'm a conscious being. I'm a conscious unit of service. And this is my actual function. And when I act in that function, then I find happiness. So as soon as anyone, whether it's man or woman or anyone, wants to be master or the Lord, then they're coming in loggerheads. They're coming in opposition to their very nature. It is not our nature. It is not our swabhav. You say swabhav. It's not the nature of the Atma to be the enjoyer. Krishna is saying bhoktaram. He says, I am the bhogi. Bhokta means bhukti. Bhukma means bhog. I am the enjoyer. It is me. He's telling. So Krishna is telling, when we get down to, okay, this is dharma. Dharma means the dharma of the Atma. It's called Atma Dharma. I'm not talking about varna dharma. Varnas change. And sometimes you're a Brahmin, but if it's a war, you may act as a Kshatriya. You see throughout Mahabharata, Parashuram, he was a Brahmin, but he acted as a Kshatriya. And there's so many stories like this. Vishwamitra Muni, he was a Kshatriya, a warrior, but then he did tapasya and became a Vairagi, became like a yogi. It's not like a Brahmin something. So varna can change, ashram can change, ashram dharma, you're a brahmachari, you're following ashram dharma, then you're a grihastha, you follow the grihastha dharma. Ashram can change, varna can change, you can become male this life and female next life, but your dharma never changes. That's why the real term is sanatan dharma. You've heard this term, no? Sanatan dharma. This transcends Hindu dharma. Sanatan dharma is not Hindu. It is not Christian, it's not Muslim, it's not Shinto or Chinese or Japanese or anything. Sanatan Dharma is, I am Sat. The Jiva, the living entity, is Sat. I am eternal. And Dharma is eternal. And my eternal definition is, I'm an eternal servant of God. And Lord Chaitanya, he came 500 years ago to preach this. Jivera Sorupaya Krishnara Nityadas. The Sorup. What is the actual form? Is my form male or female? You can be man this life and female next life. My actual form is that I'm a servant of Krishna, Nityadas. So this is some points I was making. So there, in the Shastras, so then Dharma, so that we say we're Hindus, so we follow Dharma. So Dharma means Dharma Shastra. Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. This means, this is from Bhagavatam. Krishna is telling that the laws of Dharma, Dharman tu sakshat, they're personally manifested by me. They're manifested by me. And there's one verse that I wanted to read here too. This is in 6th canto of Bhagavatam. This is Yamaraj speaking, and everyone knows who Yamaraj is. He's someone we don't want to meet. We don't want to hear about him. We just say, Jai Ho. But he's saying, Veda pranito dharmo, yadharmas tad viparyaya, Vedo narayana sakshat swayambhur iti shushama. He says, what is prescribed in the Vedas constitutes dharma, religious principles. And the opposite of that is irreligion. The Vedas are directly the supreme personality of God in Narayan, and they are self-born. This we have heard like this. So this is basically, in the Vedas we find dharma. As I mentioned, there's ashram dharma, and then there's varna dharma. And if we look at the Vedas, then we'll see, what are the rules and activities? Dharma means we say duty. I'm doing my duty. Well, duty must be guided by a set of rules. There are laws and rules for human life. Just like in India, there are laws of India and there's laws of Delhi, traffic laws, etc., building codes. You're facing all that with your new factory. You have to bribe or whatever. You have to satisfy the building codes. So there are codes to conduct life. To conduct your business, you have to follow the law. To conduct your traffic, your life in traffic, you have to follow the law. So to conduct our human life, then it's lawlessness? Is whatever I feel, whatever I want, whatever I think, this is the law. This is how we conduct our behavior. That's animals are moving by instinct. Animals are moving by instinct and dictate of the senses. The tongue is pushing, run for this. The eyes are pushing. But human life, because if you go to Delhi and say, "Why the hell with traffic laws? What do I care? I park my car anywhere." Acha, then go shopping and come out and look for your car. They tow it away because you parked it in the wrong zone. I think you know what I'm talking about. So if you violate the law, then punishment. You think that God is, there's no laws in this universe? It's a lawless thing? It's just by chance, Big Bang? It's ordered. It's very ordered. It's very structured. And it has laws. And we have to follow things, you know, correctly. So the Vedas are the law books for humanity. And if you look at the Vedas, you look at Manu Samhita. You look at Puranas. Bhagavad Puran, you look at Bhagavad Gita, and you look at Ramayana, you look at Mahabharata, you look at all the scriptures. And all the scriptures, they talk about Grihastha life. Grihastha life. Grihastha life means centered on God. And then they say, in Grihastha life, there is some provision for mitun, for combination, union, man, woman. And what is it? What is the purpose of that union? As everyone well knows, the purpose of the union is child, producing children. So all of these scriptures I mentioned, Manu Samhita, which is a law book for mankind, Bhagavad Puran, Bhagavad Gita, these are all familiar books to you. I'm not saying any book you never heard. Every one of those shastras, every one of those law books given directly by God, which contain the principles of Dharma, they're all saying that sex in marriage, not for producing children, is sinful. It's sinful. It's against the law. And if you violate the laws, you suffer. Now you see, in this Kali Yuga, present day we're living in, how much rampant illicit sex activities are going on. And the scientists are racking their brains simply to produce drugs and different mechanical devices to simply facilitate illicit sex until you die. Generally when a man gets old, he has no sex power. But now you can take drugs and have sex power. So, human life living like monkey. Human life living like dog, pig, pigeon. Pigeon has 50 times a day sex. So people are so much mad for sex. Become a pigeon. Become a dog. Why have human form of life? So do you think there's no reaction? Whenever there's action, we all went to school. Whenever there's action, then there's an equal and opposite reaction. What goes up must come down. So the laws are there. So everyone's pushing the laws. Ah, God, God's dead. God is dead. There's no laws. Freedom, do what you want. We have science. We have drugs. We have Viagra, this, that, the other thing. What do we care? Do our own thing. So we're pushing. So we're acting against Dharma. We're acting against Dharma. We're acting against the laws of God. Do you think there will be no reaction? Reaction's coming heavy. Heavy. Look at how much AIDS there is. All these sex diseases are like unlimited. It's like they're keeping it under the cover, but it's like an epidemic proportion in India and Africa and all around the world. These are sex-related diseases because everyone's going against the laws of God in the pursuit of what they think is the only happiness or pleasure, and they're getting the reaction. Right now, what to speak of next life? Now you live like a dog and a pigeon in pursuit of the sex enjoyment. Next life you become dog and pigeon. How do you think these bodies are there? And then in this life, so much suffering is there. It's heavy reaction. So this is, you know, this is the law. This is the law. And then, so then someone might say, so that I had heard this term cooperation. That we say that in family life, there should be cooperation. There's two terms that we usually hear, not only in family life, anywhere we have a group, a society. Wherever you have a group of people living together besides one, even if you're living alone, you have to cooperate with your environment. because God is everywhere. The personality of God is everywhere, so you always have to be in cooperation. So there's cooperation and sacrifice. These principles are there, even if you live alone. You say, I live in an island. Well, I have to cooperate with the seasons. Like it may become very cold, and I can't say, well, I'm on this island, no one's here. There's no real morality, so I can walk around with no clothes. No, it's freezing cold. I have to cooperate my environment and wear some warm clothes to protect myself on that cold island. It's like this. So cooperation is sacrifice. So I looked up cooperation in a dictionary because we use words and everyone has some idea. Oh yes, I think I know what you mean. My idea of cooperation is you do whatever I say. That's my idea of cooperation. My idea of cooperation, this is my house, you do whatever I say, that's cooperation. Really? And someone else, so this is a very subjective idea. Dictionary gives objective definition, that's why it's a dictionary. There must be some final word. What is cooperation? Cooperation is working together to achieve something. Working together, co-op, operating conjointly. Operating, co means two. Cooperation means, very beautiful definition, working together to achieve something. To achieve what? Husband and wife break all the religious principles, enjoy unlimited sex life, so this way they cooperate and work together. And what do they achieve? They both achieve the body of a dog in the next life. Both become a pig or a monkey. Very good. You really achieve something in human form of life. That's what human form of life is meant for? I don't hear that in the Vedas. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Moksha, mukti. This is the goal of life. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to introduce a higher goal, Bhagavat Prem. This is a Prema Purushartha. This is the fifth goal of life, Bhagavat Prem. This is higher than moksha, love of God. So this is a very nice definition. Yeah, working together to achieve something. Husband and wife should work together to realize God. And I'm going to read you an excerpt from an article from my Guru Maharaj about this point. That cooperation. He was giving a lecture on the true Hindu marriage. We say I'm Hindu, and your marriage began with a Hindu rite. It's called samskara. It's called vivaha yajna, vivaha samskara. This is one of Dasavita samskaras. There's 10 samskaras in the life of a proper Aryan or spiritual person. One is the jata, the garbhadan samskara, which no one does, conception, and then Nam Sanskara and Jata Sanskara and Chura Sanskara and Vivaha Sanskara and Vidya Sanskara. There's different sanskaras. So at least we do one. We get married. Swaha. We walk around the fire and we tie our dhoti and sari. And then we make this is called Vivaha Yoga. This is Hindu. So one sense you say, yes, I want a Hindu marriage and I want a Hindu wife and I want to live like an animal. this is contradiction. This is a joke. It's like a joke, just like Christians. Prabhupada, they asked my Param Guru, what do you think of Christianity? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he said, it's a good idea, but I've never met one. I've never met a Christian. Christianity is a good idea. Love God, serve your fellow man, and this and that. He said, yes, Christianity is a good idea, but I never met one. So if you take this into our country, because my Guru Maharaj used to say, it doesn't matter whether you're a Hindu or a Christian, but be a true Hindu. Be a really follow the Dharma of a Hindu or the Dharma of a Christian. So if you take it here, someone says, oh yes, I'm Hindu. Really? Do you know what is Hindu? Hindu means you follow Dharma. Do you know what Dharma is? Dharma is the laws of God. The laws of God are given in Shastra. So this is my own, my Guru is telling this. Griha. We say I'm a Grihasta, isn't it? Generally, this is the second order of life. Grihasta. Grihasta is a house. Griha means house. And sta means situated in, located in, placed in. Grihasta. So, Grihasta is one who's situated in a house, living for the purpose of serving God. In one sense, human society is the household of God. Very interesting. This whole human society is God's household. He is the Parampita. He says in Gita, Sarva Yona Shakuntaya Murtiya Sambhavantiya. Tasam Brahma Mahadyodir Aham Bija Pradapita. Krishna is telling Arjuna, Aham Bija Pradapita. Bija Prada. I give the seed. I give the seed of life. The seed. The semen is only a chemical, and the ovum is only a chemical. Some bodily production. But then the seed of life, that's given by God. You can combine so many times, but if it's not your fortune, no child will come. Many people are married. I think your own sister married so many years, isn't it? Some no child. Yeah. And she got the blessings of Giriraj when she got a child. You maybe forget. I remember. Means blessings of God. Aham bija pradapita. He says, I am the pita. I am the father. I am the master. So this is nice. He's saying this whole human society is a griha. It is the house, the human house, the human family. And the father is one. The father is one, God. This is God's griha, where Godhead is the only master, the Lord of the house. Like we say, like my father used to say when my brothers and I would get in arguments and fight, my father would come and say, listen, this is my house. This is my house. If you don't like it, out. You guys just go out and get your own house. You're making, because, you know, we were just going crazy sometimes. So he used to assert himself. He said, look, this is my house. I'm the master. You go make your own house. Anyway, this whole human family is God's griha. God is the only master. He is the one lord of the house. He is the adipati, the supreme husband, the father of all. All human beings are servants of the household of God. So we're in, this is God's household, husbands, wives, children, we're all servants of the one husband, of the one father. This is God's household. This world is a house. You live in a house, but ultimately you live in this world. If he takes away the oxygen, you don't live anymore. If there's no oxygen on this planet, then we don't live anymore. So there's a layer of oxygen around the planet sustaining our existence and all life forms that's given by God. So he's providing for us sunlight, oxygen, the basics, oxygen and water, and then sunlight and food. So he's the provider. So we're all servants in the household of God. Everyone accepts with gratitude whatever is provided by the Lord through his beloved ones for his maintenance. The principle of gratitude, thanksgiving. That's why we make offerings. We offer our bhog. It's an offering of gratitude and appreciation for what God has given us. Then he accepts our offering of love and returns it as prasad. Everything is the Lord's property. No one owns any property on his own. This is the cardinal principle of Varnashram Dharma. In other words, Varnashram Dharma, four Varnas and four Ashramas. The principle is that you can say spiritual communism. All the property is not owned by the state, but it's owned by God. I am a property of God. I am created by God. I am also owned by God. You are the property of God. You are created by God. You're also owned by God. Everything is the Lord's property. This is the cardinal principle. No one may be the owner of any property or the service of another. No one can be the owner of any other property or the service of another. Very nice point. Everyone is a servant of God, the sole object of everyone's service. Krishna is the only master, friend, son, and consort of everyone. Consort means partner. You say partner. Wife is your consort or partner, or husband is your partner. Marriage does not give any rights of a master. This is like news. Acha? This is not what my father told me. This is not how he lived. Well, this is the Shastra. Marriage does not give any rights of a master. Woman and man join in wedlock only for the purpose of cooperating in the service of Krishna. This is Varnashram Dharma. It's become so perverted and so diluted in Kali Yuga that nowadays people get married and say, oh, your wife is your servant to do anything you want. You know, stand on her head and, you know, walk around like a donkey, or anything you tell her she's supposed to do. But the enlightened definition, do we ever hear this before? Oh, my dear son, my Aravind, your father's telling, now you're going to get married, so you should understand what the purpose of marriage is, that you should find a nice dharmic woman so you can cooperate and continue your spiritual practices. Fathers don't say that. They don't say that. They try to find someone who's a little shorter than you. If you're dark, she has to be fair-skinned, and she has to be the same gotra and all these 27 points of compatibility. But this is the point. This is the whole hinge of the Varnashram system. This is the whole purpose of the marriage institution. And so where is the consideration of compatibility of consciousness? So this is what my Gurudev is telling, is that the only purpose of the marriage institution was to cooperate. Remember what our definition of cooperation was. Working together to achieve something. What? Love of God. Working together to achieve something. Art. Art means something valuable. Art. Something, a valuable thing. So this is the value and the art of human art. Purush art. Purush art. The art. The object. The object of attainment. The aim and objective of human life is this. Art. And what is the art? Bhagavat Prem. So they're supposed to come together and work for this purpose. The wife is not an object of enjoyment of the husband, nor vice versa. In other words, the husband is not an object of enjoyment for the wife. They do not marry for gratifying their sexual appetites. This is supposed to be, according to Shastra, and everything we've studied and everything we've heard from our guru, including Ramayana, etc. This is the purpose of human life. We're human beings. Human beings are meant to follow the laws of God. And this is the purpose of marriage life. That a boy and a girl do not marry to gratify or satisfy their sexual appetites. And now that's all it is. That's all it is. They're supposed to marry for pleasing the Lord, not for pleasing ourselves. Now listen to this. This is what you're supposed to do when you choose a partner. They choose for their partners only such persons who serve God better than themselves. So if you're a husband, I have a son, and I'm looking for a girl for his wife, and I know that he's very religious because I've trained him up as a good dharmic person, dharma dwaji, and I know he's very serious about religion. It's a very important part of his life, because that was important for me. So I've trained him up like this. I've inculcated these values in him, religious values. So now I have to find a girl for him. So I better find someone who's okay, looking nice, all these things that he likes, but she must be very religious, and she should be more religious than him, because that will promote his cause. And then they'll both go up, they'll both progress towards the proper goal together. They'll help each other. So this was the deciding factor in choosing a boy or a girl for your daughter or son, that they were more spiritually advanced. They choose for their partners only such persons who serve God better than themselves. They offer themselves to be accepted by their partners for the privilege of being allowed to share in their superior service to Hari. What a concept. In other words, my father's giving me, I'm his daughter, he's giving me to you. You're going to be my husband. Because my father found out that you are very religious and even more religious and dedicated to me. So I'm going to offer myself to you to help you in your service to Krishna. Because you're serving better than I am, and you'll uplift me by your good example, and you uplift me by your teachings, and bring me to a higher level because you're more advanced than me, then together we'll go higher and higher on the path of Dharma, closer and closer to God. Neither the husband nor the wife is to claim the service of his or her partner on their own account. Both of them are equally, are meant to serve together for the pleasure of Krishna. This system of household discipline has its basis in the joint worship of the family deity. In other words, it's called the Griha Devata. There is always some deity in the house, like you have your temple room. So there will be joint worship, not that, oh, nowadays, oh, that deity thing, that's my wife's thing. She does this puja thing. I go and I just pay obeisances and I go. My deity is the office. You know, Lakshmi Devi, it's my deity. And I go and they do my worship. That's my wife's thing, and I don't know, that's her department. But this isn't the idea of God. This isn't the idea of Bhagavan. This isn't the idea of Shastra. But this is everyone's engagement. So household discipline has its basis in the family deity, the Griha Devata, Ishtadev. All the members of the household, this is the base of the household, all the members of the household should work in all possible ways for giving pleasure to their common master, the household deity. So the lord of the house is not the husband and not the wife. Even nowadays, wives, like you were saying, wives are the lords of the house or mistresses. But it's Krishna. And we solve all differences there. Let's cooperate for his pleasure, for his satisfaction. What does he want? What does he expect? What does he need? Because we're part and parcel of him. If he's happy, we're happy. You water the tree, you put water on the roots of the tree, the whole tree gets watered. You don't have to go to the little leaves. So we're connected to we're part of the tree of God. And if we serve him, then everything will be satisfied. Everyone should learn how to serve the family deity from one of the experienced servants within the house. So this is the idea. The girl enters the house, and the newlywed, the bride, she's been married to a more spiritually inclined person, and in that house that she's going into, the household is centered around the deity, centered around the worship of Krishna, because she's my daughter, and I raised her as a devotee of Radha and Krishna, like myself, and I taught her these values of Bhagavad Gita. So now I've given her to a very nice spiritual household, where I see, and I've examined that family, and I see that the deity is the center of their lives. So she'll go there and cooperate with that boy, and they'll both serve that deity, and I'm sure everything will be very harmonious and happy. So this is the what my Guru Maharaj is saying about the proper, this is actual proper dharmic life, that we work together, cooperate together to achieve something, which means, and this is where all happiness, because you're proposing, like your proposal is that Mr. Manchan is saying that just cooperate, and then everything will be all right. But there, in this concept of cooperation, there's two choices here. The living entity has two choices: to cooperate with a dharma or cooperate with dharma. You can cooperate with a dharma, which is against God and against religion and against Shastra. Or you can cooperate with Dharma. And if you cooperate with a Dharma, what is the result? What is the result of that? If you cooperate with a Dharma. Because the principle that you're proposing is, if my daughter or my son cooperates with a Dharma, if they go against the Shastra and do whatever they feel like it, then there'll be happiness, there'll be harmony, and everything will be wonderful. But this, you can't support this anywhere in Shastra. Because Krishna is telling, in this one verse, this is in Bhagavad Gita, he's saying in the 16th chapter, it's called the Sura, Daiva Sura Sampat, it's called the Divine and Demoniac Natures. He's saying, Yashastravidim Utsrija Vartate Kamakarata Nasa Sinma Vapnoti Nasukam Naparamgatim. He says, listen, you should cooperate with a dharma. Forget about, don't follow scriptures, don't follow Shastra, don't follow God. Follow me. I'm your husband, I'm your lord, I'm your wife, you follow me. I'm the master here, I'm the lord here. First of all, that's demoniac, that's asura, surabhav. No one is the master here. No one is the lord here except God. And anyone who tries to be a false lord, a false god, they're going to suffer. So Krishna, he's saying right here, he who disregards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims, what does he get? If you cooperate with a dharma and follow the path of a dharma, or sin, what do you get? He gets neither perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. So you're saying, your principle is, your proposal is, cooperate with a dharma and you'll get happiness. And your husband will get happiness by cooperating with a dharma. But Krishna, God, Bhagavan is saying right here, you can read. He says, na siddhim, na sukham, na paramgatim. It's very easy Sanskrit. Na sukham means no happiness, sukh. No siddhi, no perfection, no paramgatim. You won't go to the higher plane. There's no question of moksha or mukti. And then he says, yashastra vidhi utsrija vartate kamakarata. Shastra vidhi, shastra nisheda, means the rules of shastra, the laws of shastra, which I've been discussing. If you say, utsrija means tyag, the hell with it, I don't care, what do I care? I want to enjoy. Then he says, vartate kamakarata, that means calm, you're acting according to your lust. If you act according to your whim, the translation is whim, probably, but it says, vartate kamakarata. Kamakarata means your lust. I'm lusty, I'm agitated, I want this thing. Who cares about dharma? Throw it out the window. Okay, see what happens. See the reaction. You go action, reaction. You go against God. And in your pursuit of happiness, you only get distress. In your pursuit of pleasure, you only get sadness and unhappiness. This is all a dharmic. It's all against shastra. So cooperation, so you can choose, okay, you can choose, you cooperate with the dharma and see the result. Now Krishna, the same Bhagavad Gita, he says, what happens if you cooperate with dharma? With religion, you cooperate with God and you cooperate with shastras. That means sacrifice. And human life is meant for sacrifice. We say, I'm sacrificing for my family, I'm going to work. And the wife says, I'm sacrificing for my husband, I'm giving my life, I'm serving the house and cooking and maintaining the children, all these things. Wife is sacrificing, husband is sacrificing. They say like this. So if we cooperate with Bhagavan, then we perform some sacrifice, but in relation to him. And then he's explaining that in the Gita. He says in third chapter, verse 10, he says, Saha yagya praja shistva puruvacha prajapati anena pravishyadam eshavo twistakamaduk. This is Krishna's telling about the creation of the world. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures, he sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu yagya. And he blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying that if we cooperate with dharma, we sacrifice our energy and our lives to follow the laws of God and to carry out the instructions of the shastra, you will get happiness in this life and attain the supreme destination. Spiritual perfection. We'll go to Vaikuntha. We'll go to the eternal world of happiness and joy. So this is the two choices. You cooperate with a dharma and everything becomes... Actually, this is the actual... According to Krishna's... This is Krishna's words. If you cooperate with dharma and religion, you get happiness. So this definition of cooperation is very good, because this word came up. I didn't think of it. But then working together to achieve something. I'm agitated, so you cooperate with me, let's enjoy. Now I'm not agitated. Oh, we achieve something. What? A few minutes pleasure? And then 5 days later, again agitated? What are you achieving? You're simply sending up a certain bhav and a certain type of attachment, rati, which gives a new body. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyachityanti kalevaram. Krishna says in Gita, whatever you remember at the time of death, that you attain in your next life. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam. Your bhav, your smaran. If all your bhav and feelings and activities are towards God, then you're only thinking of God. In the time of death, you think of God and you become godly, you become divine. You get a divine spiritual body. You don't take another body in the samsara. So I just concluded, because we talked about this principle of sacrifice. And then so, because sacrifice is going on. We're sacrificing for material things. People sacrifice for their country, sacrifice for humanity. Mother Teresa, she was sacrificing for humanity. So the principle on what we're discussing is sacrificing for Krishna. Sacrificing our desires, sacrificing our actions, sacrificing our activities, our feelings for the pleasure and happiness of Krishna. Because if we sacrifice for Krishna, because Krishna is everything, and if we attain Krishna, then we attain everything. What's left? If we know Krishna, then we know everything. And if we have Krishna, then we have everything. Such an intimate connection we can have. And if we sacrifice for Krishna, we can have such an intimate connection with such a compassionate friend. Krishna is so compassionate. He never leaves us. He's a friend. He gets stuck on us and he never leaves us. Wherever we go, Krishna is there. He's our friend, Dinabandhu, our protector, our friend. So what more can anyone want than a connection with such a compassionate, loving, and sweet, charming friend? All this requires a little sacrifice. Like my Guru Maharaj, I remember when we joined, we were 24, and he was preaching to us. He said, okay, you're young men. Now I'm asking you, just sacrifice this one life for Krishna. You've had hundreds of lives, thousands of lives, engaged in the service of your senses. I want it, I do it. I need it, I get it. This is sense gratification. Satisfying our lust, our greed, our envy. And you've been hundreds of lives. Now I'm just asking you, simply sacrifice this one life. I'm not even saying this one life because you already spent 24 years in Maya, enjoying your senses without any God, real connection with God or service to God. I'm only asking you to sacrifice the balance of your life, the remainder of your life. If you just sacrifice the remainder of your life for the pleasure and satisfaction of Krishna, then my Guru Maharaj, he hit the podium and he said, I guarantee you'll go back to God. You go to the spiritual world without fail. And he was quite convincing and affirmative. And everybody said, Jai Prabhupada. Because it's a happy proposal. So what more could anyone want? However, as you know, we can't attain anything valuable without paying the
price.
You want to buy a nice car, you have a nice car, Honda City, nice car, comfortable car. You can't walk in there with a little few rupees in the pocket. Or at least you have to have a good guarantee from the bank. So if you want something great, you have to pay the price. We must be ready to pay for that most valuable thing. We must be ready to pay the price of sacrifice. Tapo divyam putrakiyena sattvam shidyat yashman brahmasokyam tonantam. Tapo divyam, Rishabhadeva is telling. We have to do tapasya, austerity. If we want to attain such a high attainment of life, we should be ready to pay anything. No sacrifice is too great. We should be prepared with this attitude. And Krishna is not cruel. And Krishna is not harsh. Because sometimes you think, well, I don't know, it's going to be hard. Krishna only demands for us what is real, not what is impossible. It may seem, he's making these demands to live like this, a God-centered life, a religious-centered life, a dharmic life. Oh, this is impossible. In 1929, Lord Jetland of England. He came to Calcutta and he met my Param Guru. And he said, I want to follow this line of bhakti. I want to become a devotee of Krishna and get this mukti and this prema. What do I have to do? Param Guru said, it's very easy. You simply follow these four religious principles. Acha, what are those principles? No, don't eat any meat, fish, eggs, onions, garlic. No intoxication, drinking, smoking, tea, black tea, all these things. No intoxication. And no gambling. And no illicit sex. In other words, no sex outside of marriage, and no sex outside beyond having for children. But that's also illicit. So then when Lord Jetland heard that, he said, impossible. Impossible. In his best British accent. Swamiji, this is impossible. Now, in 1929, in India, practically every single person was following these four regulative principles. It was a way of life. No one was having illicit sex. Every family had 8 or 9 children. There was no prophylactics and birth control and this, that, the other thing. People just, they did their thing. They were religious. They were dharmic. Things were much more dharmic and religious then. So it wasn't a big thing. So now when we talk about nowadays trying to follow the principles of religion and be God conscious, we may think it's impossible. But Krishna never demands anything that's not possible because he gives the strength. Krishna wants our heart. He wants our cooperation. Like we want wife to cooperate with us or husband to cooperate with us. But what about God? Well, he's a supreme master. He's a supreme husband. He's a supreme father. And what does he want from each one of us? He also wants our cooperation. And like the husband's saying, you cooperate with me? Like we hear this phrase going on. If you cooperate with me, you'll get everything. I've heard this. If you cooperate with me, you'll get everything. But actually, if we cooperate with God, we'll get everything. There's nobody in this world that can give me everything. You can't give me everything. You can't give her everything. And she can't give you everything. It's impossible. It's an empty statement. It's just words. It's only empty words. You cooperate with me, I'll give you everything. Okay, give me $10 million. Well, I can't give you $10 million. I'll give you $5,000. But Krishna is proposing here that he wants our heart, he wants our cooperation, he wants our free service, our freedom he wants. This is Gurudev's teaching. If we offer our freedom to Krishna, then our freedom is improved. Real freedom, what is real freedom? Real freedom means offering our independence and freedom to Krishna. Krishna is the supreme hero, and he's ready to give his life anywhere. Krishna will sacrifice his life for his devotee, as you know in the Mahabharata. If we surrender to the infinite, then you will get the infinite in return. God is infinite, ananta. So if we surrender to the infinite, then we get the infinite in return. You give to me, you surrender to me, and who am I? I'm infinite. Then I surrender to you, and I give you infinity. Who would not be charmed by such a transaction? This is not imagination. It is the law of love. There is a plane of love, of pure love, and Krishna or God, Bhagavan, is the Lord of that plane, the Lord of that atmosphere. The law of love. This is the plane of love where we can all live eternally if we are faithful and have sincere will to follow the teachings of the Lord. So this concludes my presentation on what I understand to be Hindu Dharma and what I've learned from my Guru Maharaj and my study of Shastra. The Hindu Dharma means a husband and wife, they live together to cooperate for the service of God and try to train our children also in the service of God.